want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. I cover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 369, recorded live on September 17th, 2014. I'm your host, Ted Hardhat, with...
Daryl W4.
Stevens at Infinitum.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. And also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by cache-advance.com for all your geocaching needs. Cache-advance.com. Go find it. Well, gee, it's only been how many hundreds of times I've said that line now? And it's like every once in a while you just don't get enough coffee and you start reading this stuff and it's just... Ugh. Welcome to the show, folks. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good stuff tonight. We have an extra special guest on tonight. Sitting to the left of Scott Burks is Ms. Shorty Knits. Welcome, welcome. Oh, so good to have you on, Dylan. All right, good stuff. Banter-wise, let's jump right into that. Not too much geocaching-wise. It's been pretty wet around North Carolina lately. We haven't had the hurricanes, but we've definitely had the rain. But the one cool thing, the one saving grace for us is this last weekend, wife Amy and I interviewed with Banana Sauce on the OB podcast. And that
actually, his name is Dinosaur.
Dinosaur, I've heard that. And even Binary Source, but who knows? He just goes by Hey Mark. That's a good thing. But yeah, good time. I had a really good interview with Mark and the OBEEP crew, and it turned out nice. It's a long podcast because I think after they do about 50 minutes worth of the actual podcast, they do the interview with us, which lasts about an hour, and then they go talking about Doctor Who for another 15-20 minutes.
Yeah.
So if you've got a really good long trip to go on, this is the show you're going to want to listen to on OBEEP. So give them a try. It was a lot of fun. And I think the interview actually worked out quite well. And Amy is just taking her place and just having fun and running with it, which I love. So really good stuff. Daryl, I saw some really cool pictures of the Michelin Man in Chicago.
Yeah, I was out in Chicago with our hosts, Scott Burks and Shorty Knits. Thank you again for that, guys. That was a real blast. We had a lot of fun.
Yes, it was good to spend some time with Daryl and enjoy his nerdiness.
Yes, lots of nerdiness, including many photospheres, and we didn't get a whole lot of caches, but we got those good caches. I think my favorite was that Vampire Empire. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah, Andy, what it does, basically, it takes you into the, what are those called?
The Pedway.
The Pedway, underneath Chicago.
Ooh.
Which I don't even know exists, and, you know, it just goes, you know, all around Chicago. It's really amazing. I mean... You go downstairs at one part of the city and you come out in a completely different part of the city. It's really weird.
Is it like the tombs of France, where you go underneath the city and they've got the skulls? I have seen the movie, so I understand how that works. So I figured
it's
Chicago.
It's like a city under the city. It's really very neat. There's stores and shops and restaurants and businesses and tunnels from one end to the other. That just take you underneath all of the businesses, and you don't even know that it's there. It was really neat. I mean, I've lived here for 25 years, and I never knew that any of that was there. It's all connected to the subway. I mean, you could potentially live down there and not come out for months. It was really, really
so. It's an actual living city under the city.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean,
yes.
It's also like if you have an apartment, some of the apartments, the bigger apartments, go down into it. So you literally. Can go from your apartment, go underground, walk to work, or take the subway, and then go into your office. You don't have to. You don't have to go outside.
Yeah. Wow, that is awesome. I can imagine during the winter that's got to be a trip.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what it was designed for, is to make it more navigable in the nasty cold weather, especially because there are such parking problems in downtown Chicago.
Wow. That is awesome. I'd love to give a shot with that myself. I've never been in something quite like that before. That's pretty cool. Mr. Corey, what do you have going?
Well, just been spending time with the family. We're in the middle of a housing situation. I currently don't have a house.
You cut off a second there. Are you still there?
Who? What? Hello? I'm still here.
All right.
Hello. So, yeah, so a little bit of cashing. We've been going back and forth just around the area and been finding some pretty neat caches, meeting up with a lot of new cashers. So it's been fun. Just been doing more event style things.
Has the weather been out in Montana as weird as it is for the Midwest?
Oh no. It's 60s, 70s, and low 80s. Sunshine.
Wow. That's awesome.
Perfect.
All right, that's a good thing to get now, because when the snow starts coming in about 3 weeks, it'll be great.
Yep.
Mm-mm. Yeah, there's already snow on the mountain.
Well, see, there you go. Edmonton and then the Montana Mountains. It all works out the best. Good stuff. All right, let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcast community. What's coming up this week, Daryl, on the Geo Gearheads?
Well, this week is our Evernote 2 show, and we're going to have Scott join us to talk about how to use Evernote in your geocaching.
Wait, I'm on the show tomorrow.
Yeah, you're on the show tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah.
Again?
He was just that surprised like a month ago when he said you were going to be on.
All right, I guess. I got to save Daryl's show now. All right, I'll be on the show,
Daryl. Man's job.
I'll send you a virtual supper club. How's that sound?
There you go. That'll get me there. There you go.
All right, so be sure to check out the Geo Gearheads for Evernote 2. That's going to be a lot of fun. I tell you what, the more I use Evernote, the more I love it. The Geo Snippets Reboot Podcast, we're doing something a little different. Tomorrow we're kind of have a little bit of Coke and Pepsi and that kind of a way of looking at multi-tool versus Swiss Army knife. We're going to go into some history of both, where they came from, and more importantly, what are some of the gadgets and gizmos on those devices that you use the most, and maybe not all the time, but sure are handy to have when you're out geocaching. So that'll be multi-tool versus Swiss Army knife tomorrow on the GeoSnippets Reboot Podcast. All right, good stuff. Let's move on to the geocaching question of the day.
Question of the day. Hey, cachers. I'm Lookout Lisa from Cache Advance, your host for the geocaching question of the day. Well, I've been caching since 2002, and I've been in the business of geocaching since 2005. Monday through Thursdays, we ask our followers on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ a question about geocaching. We recently asked, in how many states and or provinces have you found geocaches? Well, after tallying all the answers, we found, on average, cachers have found caches in 20 states and provinces. So, while we know that not every geocacher's country is divided up into states, provinces, or even territories, so some could not answer, but many cachers have had the opportunity to travel, and quite a bit. So here's what we heard. Tom on Facebook shared, in the U.S., only in Michigan so far, but I've also found several caches during both my deployments to Iraq. Don't worry, they were on U.S. bases. Quite cool. Well, Camille, also on Facebook, shared, 9 out of the 10 Canadian provinces and 19 states. Hoping to do them all, including the territories. Alaska and Yukon are next in the plans. That sounds like a great trip. Well, Charlie has another traveling hobby as well as geocaching. So he shares 33 states and 6 provinces in Canada, plus 5 states in Australia. We are also storm chasers and eclipse chasers, so we make sure to get a few caches in each new place we visit. Well, wow, as always, we really enjoy hearing about caching in different states and provinces, and you can too if you follow us, Cache Advance, on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, for the geocaching question of the day. Thanks all, and happy caching.
Well, thank you, Lisa. Really appreciate it. And I'm thinking you have to drive really, really fast if you chase eclipses. I'm just saying. I mean, come on. That's got to be a trip. And I hear crickets. Am I coming through? Is this mic on?
I got nothing on that one.
All right. It's one of those nights, and I have not had enough coffee, and the fish ain't biting. I'm just saying. All right. Let's move on to episode 369, GeoTrails, GeoTours. You say tomato. I say tomato. It's one of those things. Daryl, please. I mean, we brought the lovely Shorty Knits on, and Scott, to help go over the interesting facts and figures about GeoTours and GeoTrails. But could you please, pretty please, because I have been confused for, well, more than I want to commit, about the difference between GeoTours and GeoTrails. What are they?
Well, we probably want to get into power trails, too, since it's yet another one of those confusing terms. And the problem is, really, there's no good, hard, fast definitions for these things. So we kind of made up these definitions. Power trails, which I'm sure most of us know pretty much what that is at this point, are built for speed and numbers. Generally, the caches are close to the minimum distance so that it's, you know, go and grab them all as quickly as you can and get the maximum number of finds that you can do in a day. The geotrails are set up as a collection of caches tied together with a theme, like maybe it's good tourist locations in a city or the history of a location. You know, things like a monument trail, that kind of stuff work really well. And then geotours were something new from geocaching.com last year, and it's a specific term used by geocaching.com for a group of caches collected and displayed on the GeoTours page. So essentially, it's like the GeoTrails, but officially sanctioned by geocaching.com.
Now, do we know if it has any, the GeoTours, is there any extra steps or certifications or anything like that involved where you can officially get on their list?
Well, you do have to work with geocaching.com to get on the list and create your GeoTour. We don't know exactly what is involved with that. It sounds like it's one of those email us and we'll talk with you and figure it out. So I don't know if there's a fee that's not disclosed on the page, but they do work with the local group to get the GeoTours set up and listed.
And I'm wondering about, in that particular case, I think we brought it up on the show once or twice before. I know in the UK, there is a company that specializes in what they're calling geotours, where you kind of simulate doing geocaching, but it's so broad. It's in all the provinces. It's spread over a certain distance, and there's several of them, actually quite a few of them in the UK, where you buy the maps, they take you on the tour, you look for these virtual geocaches as you're doing this, and you get points that way, where in this particular case, it's actual geocaching. It sounds like in a similar way. There's a theme involved. There's you know, a goal put to it, and then you go off and do it.
Well, there's been the geotourism, things like the geocruises, which gets into a different thing altogether. And that's really just people organizing, usually, a group of caches that they can get fairly easily and, you know, you're fairly certain, because if you're going to take a group of, let's say, 20 or 30 geocachers who have paid for that experience, you don't want to end up DNFing those caches. So they do have to make sure that their caches that are in good shape. They usually work with a cache owner to make sure everything's in order. But, you know, that's just usually caches that already exist, and it's just a collection of what are good, easy caches for us to grab for this guided tour.
Okay.
Well, I know there's also many non-sanctioned groundspeak geotours. I mean, Crystal Lake and, you know, many of the counties around where DuPage County and many of the counties where we live, you know, it's not sanctioned by groundspeak, but if it's roughly the same thing. You find, you know, they give you a passport, you find 15 out of the 20 caches, you get a coin, you know.
Right, and that's the geotrails are technically different, you know, it's
See, but is that what you consider? Is that what you consider a geotrail? I mean, I consider a geotrail something different.
Well, yeah. At this point, the geotrail covers that kind of stuff as well, because geotours have kind of been grabbed by Groundspeak, you know, by geocaching.com, as the they're actually describing it as a geotour is a collection of geocaches that take geocachers on a tour of a specific area. They can be along a trail, a historic site, in a park, and even in the middle of an urban area. At each stop, you can introduce family-friendly activities, interesting facts, stories, and the best parts of your destination.
So,
Daryl, I have a quick question for Daryl. Daryl, when you're in the woods and you see a cache about a path leading to the cache that's all matted down, that goes right to the cache, what do you call that?
Yeah, I know. I call those geotrails, too.
Well, that's actually
a lot of people call them muggle trails.
What you're right now, what you're calling a geo trail, I would consider a series, like, you know, a passport series or a series of caches that are all related in one way or another, not necessarily, a sanctioned tour like we're talking, but like Scott said, the city series or a county series or something that are all related.
Yeah, and a lot of the original geo trails that I saw, you know, advertised as trails were along, I think it was the Appalachian Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And they were setting up the geo trail. It's, you know, they, you know, specifically wanted to separate themselves from Power Trail.
I've hiked that, by the way.
Oh, very nice. So the main
pre-caching, I assume?
No.
Excellent.
No.
There's a lot of places you can hike.
I hiked about 100 feet of it, but I hiked it.
So the main distinction, I guess, that everybody can pull from this, depending on how they want to really take this, is if geocaching.com designates it as a geo tour, then it's a geo tour. Otherwise, it's a geo trail.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty safe way to go.
It's not what I call a geo trail. It's annoying that it's called that.
Yeah, well, it's the same kind of problem that we ran into when they decided to come up with challenges.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah. That was so,
yeah. They co-opted a name that was already meant for something
else. Yeah.
So yeah, it just ends up confusing. And it's not like GeoTours is a bad name for this. I understand why they grabbed that, but it had been used beforehand.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a term
in capacity,
it's
just not being listed. And we don't know exactly what is involved. We know that. When they're pitching the geotours to the property owners or to the local chambers or whatever, you know, right on the page it says, we can also help you with a geotour passport, which enables visitors to track their progress throughout their adventure. You can even reward geocachers with custom geocoins and trackable items.
Which I've seen on geotrails.
Exactly.
Well, the one that comes to mind is the big one that we're putting down here in North Carolina for the Civil War geotrails, where there's three different sections of 50 geotrails each. It's not power trails. It's just 50 X amount of miles long. 50 geocaches are placed in three different main sections in North Carolina, and that whole thing is a geotrail.
It's not a series. It's not a geotrail. It's a series.
We are going to so confuse people.
That's a series.
Yes, I know. It's they are interchangeable. It really is. But for the
can we just give him the virtual slap? Whatever you want to call it, because, I mean, yeah, the geo trail of this series, whatever it is, you know, geocaching has coined the geo tour as that specific venture that they have enlisted, and hopefully I can get out there to the Helena one. It's only 6 hours away from me, and I've been talking back and forth to the several cachers who originated that and placed that, and hopefully I can get some feedback about what it took to create that, what it took to put that on here fairly soon before there's too much snow.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to have their own isms about what it should be called, whether it's a series or whether it's a geo trail or whatever. There's always going to be those special sets and pairs of caches that were designed to go together that are not going to be specifically sanctioned by geocaching. but are going to be special to those that placed it.
In geocaching.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shorty and I have done two geo tours in the past 4 months or something like that, right? And, you know, it's very different, two very different tours. You know, one was in West Bend and one was in
McHenry County.
Why don't you talk about them? Tell them what we had issues with. They were really good. They were actually really good. But, like the McHenry County one.
First of all, we made the mistake of attempting to do both of the tours in one day. And they were not designed to be done in one day. They were designed to be done over, you know, several weekends or, you know, over several days. So that was our first mistake. I do know a lot of people who have done the one in McHenry County, which is, how many caches is that? 40, 20? 20 something, but it's spread out over an entire county. It was 4 hours of total drive time between the caches, plus then the time to hike out to the caches, and like all of them were at least a 0.3 to 0.5 walk out into the preserves. And I do know people who have done it in one day. It was like a 12-hour day. And then the West Bend, we did the same thing. We attempted to do it all in one day, and it was way too much. The difference, though, the West Bend tour was really designed more. It was put on by the chamber, and it was designed more to bring people there to spend their money. It was set up where on a point system, so you earn points based on the caches that you find. You get 1 point for each cache that you find, and then points based on money that you spend there, whether it's at certain restaurants that are participating or at hotels that are participating. And then you turn in, you collect all your points, and you turn it in, and you earn a coin. We also earned a coin from McHenry County. So that was really the difference. The McHenry County, I think, really was more to bring people there to the preserves.
Now, what I'm finding interesting with this, geocaching.com are sanctioning these tours. They're listing them. They have to know the idea behind the tour when it's being created. So if this is a kind of a case where they're trying to grab a niche of this is something where people are going to be interested to come in and trying, there is a monetary type feel to it, either for the businesses in the commerce or for the areas where these tours are. That's kind of a shift from the other ways that geocaching.com has worked before, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, definitely.
And right on the page for the create your own tour kind of thing, they go into the numbers for outdoor recreational activities generate $646 billion a year, and they talk about the $800 billion in federal, state, and local tax revenue. So they are really pushing this as an economic driver.
Mm-hmm. Now that
well,
and there's
my only issue
with
West Bend was just making me spend money. You know, it was forcing me to get a hotel room or forcing me to eat at, you know, four different restaurants.
Well, not only that, but at specific restaurants. Right. We definitely would have spent money there. We would have eaten lunch there. We would have eaten dinner there, but maybe not necessarily at those specific places.
Well, and as I recall, the West Bend, you could not get the coin by just doing caches.
No.
That's correct.
You
were 5 points shy when you got all the caches, because there was 20 caches. You got a point for each cache, 3 points for a hotel, 2 points for a restaurant.
Wow. That's interesting. So, you know,
so yeah,
I don't see this as being
a bad
thing.
But that's just for the coin.
I don't see this as being a bad point. I see this as being a venture that if geocaching.com is really wanting to get into that niche of, all right, let's see if we can bring in businesses to use geocaching to bring in revenue to an area and have the geocachers benefit by having a better set of quality caches for them to find. I say go for it, but if you're going to do it, do it. I mean, I don't see a lot of push of people finding out about geotours.
Well,
yeah, one of the things... one of the things that I like about kind of the way I see the Helena one that went, the Commerce was heavily involved, and the people who put it on, the gal that I was talking to, who I originally was talking to, who did a lot of the headline stuff, she wasn't the cashier. She wasn't one of the cashiers who put it on, but she was a spokesman from the Commerce. And she worked closely with these cashers while they were getting everything set up, and they were talking to other cashers, and there was a multitude of cashers that put this together. And they were collaborating which cashers should be a part, which cashers should not be a part, and just to highlight the whole town. And it was amazing because, you know, not did it monetize, you know, you didn't have to, you know, go to certain places to really bring it to boost the economy. I mean, they had GPSs where you could rent them for like $5 or something like that, you know, where it wasn't a big gain, but it was bringing people in, and they knew that, hey, if we bring people in, we know that they're going to spend money. We don't care where, because it's helping out the economy,
right, but
everywhere.
But the West Bend Geo Tour actually made you spend money at certain restaurants and or hotels. Yeah, I mean, to me, that it ceases being a geo tour. You know, a geo tour is about learning about the history of the town, or learning, you know, seeing interesting things that the town and or the county wants to show you. It's not about, hey, come here and spend money in my town, please. To me, I don't think that's what it's about.
No, but that's just to get the coin. You didn't necessarily need to get the coin, in which case you
no,
could just
have done
the cashes.
No, but any geocacher worth a spit is going for the coin. You know, you're not going. If you want part of the tour is
sure.
The coin. I mean,
sure, but yeah, you don't. That's not, you know. You can complete the geo tour without completing the passport to get the coin.
Right.
Well, and you have to understand that it's geo tours is still young. It started what, July of 2012, so it's only barely, not even 18 months old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, right now there's only 45 geo tours listed on the site worldwide. Some, you know, we had a couple of them that weren't too far from me, but they disappeared before I could do them. So they're not permanent geo tours either. And that's one of the other situations that I'm running into, is I wanted to go do some of these tours, but they were still, you know, 4 hours or more away. And if it's that far, it's something I'm going to have to go and plan, take the time
sure.
to do it,
yeah.
and depending on the caches. There is one geo tour that has 150 caches.
Which one?
And it's the Sud Quest
Vendée.
I'm probably totally mispronouncing that, in France.
Oh.
Oh, my.
So 150 caches. Can you imagine how tough that's going to be to pull off?
Well, some of them are across the country, like the dinosaur train tour. Those are actually caches that anybody can hide a cache and submit it to Jim Henson or PBS or whatever the organization is that's running that. They approve it, and then they will list it as part of that tour. So caches on that tour are all over the country. There's no passport like the other ones that we've been talking about. There's no coin at the end. There's nothing like that. It's just a series, basically, of caches that's listed as a tour.
Right. Yeah, and there's only two that have only 9 caches. The one at the Geocaching HQ is easily done in a day. It's designed so that you go to Geocaching HQ, you do all 9 caches, you come back, and you're done. The other one is the Smithsonian National History Tour in Washington, D.C., Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Virginia. I can't imagine that those 9 caches really are going to be done in one day.
Yeah. I bet you Shorty can do it in a day.
you probably could do it in a day, but it's not designed to be done in a day. So you know, the number of caches is not necessarily what makes it doable in a day or not. But I was really surprised when we ran the numbers. The average geo tour currently listed is over 43 caches in the geo tour.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I doubt that any of these are really designed to be done in less than a weekend. I think everything is, you know, designed for that weekend discovery kind of thing or more.
Mm-hmm. So is this going to be something that's just going to sit on the wayside, And as a side to that, side note to that, what would it take to make this into something where people really want to go out and try? Because unless there are unicorns and magic fuzzy bunnies and something that's really going to be, wow, I am so glad that I went on this tour, what's going to be the draw?
Well, for most people right now, I'd say it's the geocoins.
Yeah, it's the coins.
Absolutely. Daryl, you said there were two near you that disappeared. Why did they disappear?
That's what I'd like to know, and I don't have a clue.
Were they actually sanctioned?
Yeah, well, they were sanctioned. They were on the list, and I, you know, for all I know, this could be one of those situations where you pay Groundspeak for that listing on the site, mm-hmm. so after, you know, the 6 months or whatever that they paid for, it gets delisted. Sure. It could just be that they ran out of coins and didn't want to be listed as a geotour anymore. It's entirely possible that some of the caches got muggled and they just said, no, we're archiving the whole thing. Bye-bye. So I don't know. I'm sure there's plenty of other things that might have happened, too, that we don't really know about.
It is Detroit, after all.
One of the first things that I would have thought of, there's so many choices that they could use for geotours in West Virginia with WV Tim, and yes. ones that the quality and the just the overall greatness of the caches there, I am shocked they're not in here. So if it's something that they're happy to keep as geo trails or series, that might be one thing, but if I was geocaching.com and I wanted to use this as a venture, I'd be knocking on some people's doors.
Sure, yeah. I mean, there's some fantastic series out there mm-hmm. that should yes. be geotours.
Yeah,
absolutely. And one of the things that I think might motivate people without the geocoins is what could you do for the series as another stat? So you have, you know, your hidden found and then like a series stat as well.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just badges. You know, they've did the seven souvenirs more like badges this year. Maybe each time you complete one of the sanctioned geo tours,
you get a tour badge.
You get one of those. Yeah.
I don't think a tour stat would be a bad idea.
I think that's a great idea.
No, and I think that that's a way that they could expand it without getting the coin. And one of the situations that I've seen on a number of these geo trails is the only way to get that coin is you have to go complete the passport right. and turn it in person
yeah.
during business hours yeah. at the office designated. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, it's like, oh, we're open Tuesdays and Thursdays right. from 1 to 4.
Yeah, we had one that was 45 minutes away, and we actually lucked out. They actually let us email. We took pictures of our passport. And emailed it to them, and then we were able to go pick them up, like, a different day, like, the next weekend.
Yeah.
Well, one of them I got mailed to me. They were nice enough to mail it to me. Yeah.
Because they were out of coins, wasn't it?
We went nice. To the office to pick it up, and they had just run out of the coins. So they had to get more from a different office, and then they mailed it to me.
Wow. That's something. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how this develops over time. And I really hope somebody grabs the reins on this and really, you know, turns this into something worth it and more visible and make it more of a want-to type situation to get into.
Well, I think it will. I don't think it's going to go the way of the challenge cache. I mean, people are doing them. There's coins involved. You know, I mean, I enjoy doing them. It's just there's not that many around here. You know, I don't think they're going anywhere personally.
No, I don't think they're going anywhere, but I could see where the geotours stay pretty much as they are, and I kind of hope that there's another one that's called, you know, like GeoSeries or something, so that it's a little different name that doesn't get mm-hmm. as easily confused and co-opted, but something where it is doing those icons or whatever that's open for all cachers to submit so that they can work with their local cachers, and you have these series of really awesome caches like WV Tim's series mm-hmm. of caches that you then get something for accomplishing all of those.
Yeah, because I think that if you are able to give another stat or another badge or something at least for the cacher who finishes it, you know, as well as a geocoin, because that's just a personal treasure. I mean, if a geocoin, if not, I mean, I would do it either way, but if there was a stat or a badge or something that tells me, you know, and even if it did go by the wayside, you know, at least, you know, even like the challenges, don't throw it away and tell me that I didn't do anything.
Yeah, because
you know, that kind of burned my toast a little bit. I'm like, hey, you know, I spent all this time doing this stuff for you, and now it shows I haven't done anything. But, you know, it needs to stay, and I think that it's going to work out good, because if you get the commerce to stay in there, and you get the caches that are going to do that, no matter how many bad ideas are out there and how many people are going to be placing these silly things that look like bombs... Mm-hmm. I think the good press of geocaching through the communities and the people working together with the cities is going to overpower those bad decisions, and you'll hear more good stories than you will bad.
You look at the state parks and you look at all the different success stories that are already out there showing that how geocaching can help a community or an entire area bigger than the community. I think that's great. And as far as the badges go, what's the cost of a digital badge, really?
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Well, the other thing that I would request geocaching.com adds to this is the time limit, whether it be limited to, you know, 500 coins or something, limited to next 6 months, just so that, you know, if I knew that those were limited time geotours, I would have made
a more substantial effort
sure. to get out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but because it wasn't listed, I didn't know that I had to go. And we should also note that when you go to the tour page, it does give you some information about the tour, what it's about, some photos, and it does have the option to download the GPX file of those caches.
Mm-hmm. All right, good stuff. All right, good, excellent discussion, and obviously this is something that over time is going to need to be gone over again and hopefully see the improvements that are being done with this. I love the time limit idea, because that definitely makes it where, one, you're almost guaranteed that the geocaches that are involved with it are going to be kept up fresh and maintained for that amount of time, and then you get another one that's formed someplace else starting from scratch. I love that idea. All right, good stuff. Next week, Sonny from Podcaster Podcast is going to be promoting his brand new business, online business, Pocket Lenses. And you know how cameras are with geocaching. It's like peas and carrots. It's a great thing, and this specializes with the cameras that geocachers most usually have in their pocket when they're out geocaching. So it's going to be some really good stuff. Come on by, see Sonny, and we're going to have some really good questions for him next week. All right, good stuff. Well, we'd like to thank everybody here. Thank you, Corey. Thank you, Daryl. Thank you, Scott. Shorty Nitz, you're the greatest. Thank you for stopping on by. And thank you, fine folks, for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. We want to thank Lisa from cash-advance.com as well. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast, right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Daryl Wattenberg and Andy Smith. The show is copyright 2014 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.